Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. Diving into the next team, new coaching staff here, we have the Houston Texans. And at the center of some oddities, I would guess would be the easiest way to say it, they hired David Culley, one-year stint there, basically. He brought in Lovie Smith. It was interesting. He brings in Lovie Smith, and then I think it was a widely panned hire when it happened. It was one of those, I think a lot of the reaction was, oh, look, we have a new coach, but he is an old, older in age, right? Older generationally. And he goes and hires basically an old school defensive coordinator. And yeah, there's a lot of, criticism, fair or unfair, is beyond. But then he basically gets to a point of he can then inherit the job. So it's always a curious thing when that happens. Their defense was, I think they were just replete really with, with a lot of, just a talent deficiency, really, is and without Watson, right? There's a lot of to be made up there. They ranked pretty poorly in rush defense. They actually ranked top 10 in terms of interceptions, which is interesting. They were below the baseline there in terms of yards per attempt and the like. But they were kind of a gettable team, really, and we saw how they finished. They bring in Pop Hamilton. I think Hamilton's an interesting, has a really interesting career track. So I'll take you through that a little bit here. Very much I don't know if journeyman's the right word. It's tough to ever really say with some of these coaches about what would qualify as a journeyman, but definitely all over the place in terms of where he's been. He did a lot of college work and then was basically doing some offensive assistant stuff through the 2000s, ended up at Stanford with David Shaw, wide receivers coach, and then offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach as well. And he might have overlapped with, it was right around the time that that Jim Harbaugh had left there as the head coach of Stanford. Yeah, I think he overlapped for a year with him, if memory serves there. So, the 2010 season was when he overlapped with them, and then he stayed. He earned the promotion to offensive coordinator the following year. Two years as the offensive coordinator. Andrew Luck is one of his proteges there. He is there for 2 years and then jumps to the offensive coordinator job of the Indianapolis Colts, basically follows Andrew Luck. Is there the 2013, 14, and 15 seasons. Before he's fired in the 2015 season, he becomes the associate head coach and an offensive coach for the Cleveland Browns in the 2016 season, and then ends up back at Michigan the following year in 17 and 18 with Harbaugh, and then leaves there, is off a year, and then is the head coach of the DC Defenders, which is actually interesting. He parlays that into a job with the Chargers as a quarterback coach, which would have been Justin Herbert's rookie season. And then he goes and becomes the quarterback coach, passing game coordinator for the Houston Texans. So all that is a very windy road, if you will. I thought that some of the interesting stuff here, because the best sample size of him really calling plays is in Indianapolis. When you look at it in terms of passing attempts, they were 15th, 1st, and 9th in 2013, 14, and 15, respectively. The ADOT stuff got bigger each year, which is interesting. 30th out of 44 for Andrew Luck, qualifiers in 2013, 12th out of 42 in 2014, and then 6th out of 39. And 2015, so really goes deeper relative to the competition in ADA. What I found was interesting is the play action stuff. 26th in terms of play action in 2013, 28th out of 42 in 2014, and then 37th out of 39th in play action in 2015. And that's his last season with Luck. Those are all things that aren't right. That's not what I want to see. I want to see, you know, positive growth. It's funny because you look and you see some of these teams too that didn't throw, you know, just there's just more play action being thrown now. So it's interesting to sort of compare what baseline was back then to baseline is now. However, that's 2015, right? We're allowed personal growth. In 2020, again, small sample size, different context, but I think notable. The DC defenders, top two quarterbacks, Tyree Jackson and Cardell Jones, at 42.9% and 29.2% respectively, led the XFL in play action. So a marked increase as well would be what I would say there. So I do think that's a pretty interesting it's pretty interesting. And then, you know, we could go back and look. You know, he was their offensive coordinator. He was their quarterback's coach last year, Houston's quarterback's coach last year. And so we'll take a step forward. He didn't do the play calling, but I think, you know, at least he has an idea of what we're going to see out of maybe Davis Mills. I don't think Deshaun Watson's going to be back, you know, and so we'll see what. What I would suspect, you know, I'm recording this on Monday and for a recording later this week. And, you know, I'm going to post it, be ready to go with it, you know, and it just play. But it wouldn't shock me if I needed to record this between now and the time that I recorded it and the time I release it because of a Watson trade, right? This is kind of the time where this stuff is going to start to happen, which sort of be my inclination. You know, we'll get some quarterback movements. We've started to see some of the news and the like already happening. So what really does it, you know, leave us? I don't know. You know, I don't know if there's a huge takeaway from this coaching staff change. I mean, obviously on the defensive side, I think it's notable that Lovie Smith for sure. I think Pep Hamilton's like fine. I don't think he's a revolutionary offensive coordinator. He's probably not a horrible one either. You know, so I'd play it pretty neutral. I think what we're going to see here in terms of some of the changes, you know, we basically, they didn't, it's interesting because the changing landscape of the team with Jack Easterby, and now they have Nick Caserio, from the Patriots. I found it interesting when you go back and because you can look and see how the comp picks are divvied up, and it's basically, you know, free agents signed. You know, the rough sort of quick and dirty of it is it's free agents signed. You know, from your team, right? That other people signed minus the free agents you signed. That sort of is where all your comp picks are. They had just a ton of free agents that they brought in that essentially did very little in terms of, you know, in terms of their overall production, and they got no comp picks back. They only lost one player that would have been comp pick eligible, which is Will Fuller. So it's interesting, like, as you sort of, I'm really curious about how this team builds going forward, because they basically spent a whole bunch of, like, free agent bucks, and it didn't, without a particularly cohesive aim in mind. So that would be the thing that I would say with them. I think it's an interesting, arc on where they put themselves. So I'm hoping for better stuff for them going forward. They do pick... They pick high. They pick 3, 37, 68, and then 80. And then that's just the first three rounds. And then once the comp picks get in, we'll get that figured out a little bit more. But, yeah, it's an interesting spot where they find themselves potentially first quarterback. That's entirely possible. Yeah, they bring back Rex Burkhead. So I don't think they have a huge, huge need at running back. You know, maybe they sort of go the cheap route again. That wouldn't shock me. That would seem to make some sense where they are in their team build. Probably have a needed receiver and tight end. Brandon Cook's potentially on the move there. Tight end, you know, they don't really have much there. And then, you know, Laremy Tunsil is one that could potentially be on the move as well. When you start looking at it, it's interesting because you can, like, you could paint the picture of, all right, how deep do they want their rebuild to go? I don't know why they hired Lovie Smith if they wanted to do a deep one. Listen, could they have more picks coming down the line if they traded Watson? Sure. Like, they've got cap space, effective cap space of like $5 million, a little bit less than that. If they moved on from Watson, if they moved on from some of these other guys, they could open that up a little bit more, sort of replenish the pick stock and sort of go young, go cheap. That wouldn't shock me. However, I don't think that they're particularly well, I don't know if organized is the right word, or well calibrated, I guess, to building this team with some of the shenanigans that they've got going on with the Easterby stuff and all that. I'm not sure how seamless this transition into this new staff is going to be. I do think it's Davis Mills has probably played himself well enough to earn a shot to compete against somebody. You know, listen, if they pick someone at 3, is that going to be the case? Probably not. But if they pick someone at any point outside the first round, like, I think Davis Mills could play well enough to hold his own. He played on par with the other guys who went well ahead of him last year. Davis Mills is going to be one of these guys that I think is interesting from the perspective of dynasty, about how we think about, you know, taking picks. I saw recently that, hey, listen, any quarterback outside the top 15 doesn't really matter. I don't believe that. I actually believe that, hey, if you can get them, right, it's all a cost thing, right? If you have Davis Mills, that gives you the ability to maybe be flexible at other parts of your roster, right, or maybe make a trade where you can give someone a quarterback, right? I think that those things make a lot of sense. Kellen Mond was probably my preferred guy to do that with last year. I think Kellen Mond, Davis Mills, and maybe Kyle Trask, I think, might have been the other guy that was sort of in that category of like mid-round guys that were sort of out there and available. I liked Mond over the rest of them, but I think it was, you know, I think taking a shot on a guy like Mills next time makes a lot of sense as well. Like, that'll be a different place where I will recalibrate a little bit more as well. Take, you know, and probably even more so over, you know, some of the tight end profiles, especially in Superflex, some of these safe leagues. It's just tough to hold on to those tight end developmental guys. You know, you think of guys like Hunter Long and some other guys who we might have, like Noah Gray would have been on the list of guys that we would have been like interested in. Third, fourth round, that type of range. And, you know, John Bates, even, for example, like those guys were all on the board and like, hey, like, these guys are interesting. I think the better bet for maybe a lesson learned from Houston would have been, hey, let's go and do, let's just take the quarterback and just see what happens. I don't necessarily think he's going to be like a franchise quarterback or anything like that, but I think it's an interesting asset. That'll be something that I think we'll have to maybe readjust going forward. So that is a lesson learned from Houston from last year. So other big things to watch for, you know, I really do think the trade market here, it's Watson, it's Cooks, we'll see what they're going to do with him. He doesn't have guaranteed money left, so they got to probably do something. He's going to want something done, whether it's he's traded or extension or, he's guaranteeing some of his money or the like. He is on the last year of his deal. His contract voids after next year. It's a $16.2 million cap hit. They could save $7.5 million by cutting him. But I do think at this point he's certainly interesting and certainly a wide receiver that could be valuable to a contending team. I keep thinking a team like the Bills. What are they going to do at wide receiver 2 or wide receiver 3? Like, that's a really interesting spot for a guy like Cooks. Like, there's other teams as well that could be interested. And what's the wide receiver 2 situation look like in Tampa if Godwin walks? Like, you start looking around, like, there's some interesting spots there. If what's the situation in Atlanta, which could actually be an almost better spot for Cooks to sort of fall into with, I think, a better quarterback situation and maybe an open spot with Ridley not there. So you think you look at all these things, it's a really interesting situation for him, because I do think there will be interest in the market and he could find himself in a spot where, again, he's just going to produce. And I think he'll produce in Houston. I think he'll produce someplace else other than Houston. We kind of know what Brandon Cooks is at this point. So excited for all that. Again, this is a team that I think we'll be revisiting in some way, shape, or form. Maybe not necessarily for the good, but we will be revisiting whether there's Watson trades and Tunsil trades, speculated, or Cooks trades or restructures or what or the like. So Well, that'll pretty much do it for this episode. And until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.